want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Tonight on Business Sense, we're not just talking business. We're talking about home. We're talking about the heartbeat of South Africa's townships, where hustle meets hope, and where billions move through an economy that many still don't fully understand. Joining me is someone who's not just studied the township economy from a distance, but who lives it, breathes it, and has dedicated his life to transforming it. Entrepreneur, mentor, and township champion, Bulelani Balabala. We're going beyond the headlines and big numbers tonight. We're unpacking the real challenges, the overlooked opportunities, and most importantly, the powerful vision he holds for the future of our townships. Bulelani Balabala, what an honor. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Good evening. How are you?
I am doing well. How about you?
No, man. I'm very good.
Bulelani, your name keeps coming up when people talk about township entrepreneurship. But before the titles, who are you? Where did your journey begin?
No, man. I mean, my life journey started in Tembisa. I was born and bred in Tembisa in a section called Mkanza. Raised by a phenomenal woman with an older brother. So I schooled there, and I guess that's where I would say my entrepreneurial journey was inspired and sprung up from, you know. And I guess from there, those are where all the lessons I learned as a young kid from my grandfather and other individuals, just life lessons that would go today and become the lessons I utilize in business and taking pride of culture, the things I've learned to grow a sustainable business.
Yeah. The 15-year-old you, if he had the chance to look at you right now, what would he say? Would he say, "Ah, ndoda, how did we end up here?" Or would he say, "This is exactly where we were meant to be"?
I think he'd be shocked.
Okay.
Because the 15-year-old me wanted different things. I mean, the 15-year-old me wanted to live in a four-room, in a nice four-roomed house.
Oh.
You know, with his family, picket fence, ekasi, you know, drive a nice small car, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So everything, and there was no thought of entrepreneurship, you know. So for me to be able to have achieved some of the things that I've achieved have been testament. Because then, as a 15-year-old guy, my highest grade was grade 9. You know, as a college dropout, high school dropout, the one thing I really wanted was to put bread on the table, you know. But however, that mindset develops over the years. You move from a mindset that says hustle to a mindset that says be sustainability. Build systems into your business, build controls so that things are able to operate within your presence and your absence.
Yeah. White picket fence and township economy are chalk and cheese. What sparked that obsession inside of you? Why the township when so many people are trying to get out of it?
No, man. I think for me, it was you could almost call it like a God-given purpose, right? Because, I mean, I've got a 19-year-long entrepreneurship career. I mean, I started when I was 16, and I've been at it since, right? Yeah. This year, August, I celebrate 19 years of business.
That's crazy.
So the focus was not entrepreneurship, you know? The focus was simply, at the time, the focus was to have a corner office with a view in Rosebank.
Of course.
You know, up until, I think it was what, into my entrepreneurial journey, and I met a gentleman that I was pitching my business to, and there was nothing about the things I was telling him that impressed him.
Yeah.
You know, and he was really drawn more to the story. And he said, "Just tell me more about the story," because he felt like the story had a lot of affinity. "Tell me why you started. Don't tell me about how good you are, because I know you're not that good, because I work with the best."
Yeah.
You know, but the more and more I shared the stories, the more and more I was able to gain affinity, you know, gain buy-in. And out of that, Then I learned that the township that I grew up in, that I looked down on, that I was trying to move away from, was actually an interesting story to many individuals who didn't know it or understand it.
Yeah.
Then from that point on, I started to take pride in the township, you know, started to talk about the township, promote the township, eat and live the township,
yeah.
you know. And I think, like what you've said in the opener, it was not necessarily popular, but you make it a big part of you because you're standing for it. So it sort of goes from unpopular to popular. And it's good to see people now buying products, being happy and proud to wear products with African names, you know, and wear them as luxury goods, you know. And that for me is just a beautiful story to tell.
You've piqued my interest. I'm curious to hear one of the stories that you shared with this gentleman. So if you don't mind, what is the thing
yeah,
that
no,
got
man,
him
I think,
interested
yeah,
in
Yeah, no. No, man, I think for me, it was just sharing the journey, you know, being raised by a single mother, you know, what drove my creativity, because I think one of the things that really stood out for him is how we're able to run this business and have it be so creative, but we're in the township and it's an internet cafe.
Yeah.
But I think it was that ever constant journey of iterating, making better, developing and growing oneself. Because when I started, really, I was reading books from my friend's dad's library, improving myself and bettering myself so that I'm going to become a more competitive individual.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we then got an opportunity to also then share our vision boards, what we're looking to do and achieve, and how I raised, you know, capital, how I raised and I was able to close my first deal ever, which was a 15,720 rand deal for supplying matric jackets when I had no factory, I had no bank account, I had nothing. All I had going for me was the fact that I could talk and, you know, shashaya about type thing. So that was very interesting to say, you know, where did you get that level of charisma to be able to convince, and where do you have that crack to say you'll take on an order and deliver on it when you've got no equipment or machinery and you don't even know which supplier you're going to use, you know? So those were some of the things that really stood out, you know, for him.
You know, Vanilla, as you're speaking, I'm remembering a guest I had last week, and I'm pretty sure you've had some interactions with him and you know him. Ubanele Riwo.
And yeah, I know Finlaji, nice guy.
Yeah,
nice
lovely
guy.
And you know, as you're speaking, I'm realizing that the common thing between you two is the mentality and the mindset you had in a place that didn't necessarily cultivate that mindset. So can you speak to us about how when everybody else is seeing a hardship, you're seeing opportunities? What does it take to have that foresight or that vision?
I think for me, a mindset of an individual who's willing to look to the long, you know, who's willing to have, you know, I think my mentor calls it the third eye, you know, you see things beyond what they are to the physical eye and what they are to everyone else, you know, so that you've got that level of foresight to understand where the market is going and where the economy is going. And I think for me, when I started to do the research to understand that majority of South Africa's workforce lives in the township, number one, over and above that, majority of the capital growth for a lot of large corporates, especially the ones in the services business, are primarily driven by Black individuals.
Yeah.
You know, and those individuals live within a particular space. And then also being able to unpack the fact that when we talk about there's 100 billion or 900 billion transacting in the township, those are not numbers that are coming from township entrepreneurs directly. Those are numbers that are measured out through the transactional sales. Either it's the goods supplied to these wholesalers, it's the card payment transactions from these spaces. So which then says to me, which then says to me that the township or the areas that we are running away from, there are corporates that are seeing that as the next frontier of development and growth. And the reality of it now as we stand is, you know, in the formalized markets, you know, corporates have grown to a certain point in time. Sometimes you call it a ceiling. They can't grow on the ceiling. And the next frontier of growth for them is the township economy. And being able to be good and being able to unpack, unearth, so they can take advantage of the opportunities that are there.
When I bulela nwa tochi school, you just told us that you didn't go.
Yeah, no, literally.
Yeah.
No. Literally, there are people who are academic geniuses at the time. I didn't want to be that. I mean, although much later on, I furthered my education, really just propped up, you know. But at the time, I was doing bad. My IQ was low.
Jeez.
I had a low self-esteem. I was in high school, wanted to finish matric, but my mother was being retrenched. So she then took me. She then, I guess, was being retrenched. Her thinking was the minimum entrance to an equity college is grade 9. So let me just take you to an equity college so that you get a minimum trade. I don't know how far or how long the money will take us, but let's try. And the money ran out halfway into that training, so I couldn't even specialize in anything. But for me, it was, I think, out of that, out of those challenges and frustration birth, this opportunity to actually start building stuff up from the ground, learning the ropes and navigating this entrepreneurship journey.
You literally used what you had, and what you had was your vision and the things around you, which is absolutely brilliant.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
You see, you've encapsulated it extremely well. It's using what you have. And I think also for me, it's also what I tell individuals across the board, whether entrepreneurs or not. You know, we often look at our certain life and talk, and we often look at ourselves and say, I don't have anything. But it's best because of the scarcity mindset. The scarcity mindset is told that whenever you mention the word resource, it's only assimilated to money. But we then forget the IP that's a resource, you know, which is your intellectual. Then we then forget your social capital, which is a resource. You know, we then forget, other resources that are out there for us to then take advantage of. So which is why then it sort of then paralyzes the fact that it also then paralyzes us whenever we think of starting, because we don't start something until we have money. But if you only ever start your business when there's money to start, you might not have a business in the long run. Whereas it means that you might not have even been aware of the networks that are available
for your
social capital that you need to build up, the IP resource that you need to build up, the resource that is a skill that you need to learn. So those are the things that need to be harnessed before you can even think of money as the ultimate catalyst to the growth of your, or even the start of whatever idea that you have.
You have a book, right?
Yes, I've got a book called The Township Entrepreneur's Guide to Get Things Done, you know, which just unpacks. It's got 11 chapters.
Yeah.
It unpacks in a very simplistic manner the basics, really, of how to market, how to sell, how to structure your business, the mindset you need to develop. I mean, the first chapter, I tell a bit about my story, you know, just to give a high-level, practical overview of how one started and how they get to where they are. And so for me, it's a basic handbook that you can navigate each and every day as you navigate your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. I'm happy that the kind of book you wrote is a book that unpacks things and really breaks them down, because right now I want us to talk about the township economy and break it down simply for people who may not get the concept, right? Now, people often hear big numbers like the 430 billion township economy. And I'm sure you've played with these numbers and even mentioned them on your platforms. But in reality, many people in the township are still struggling. So help us understand what exactly makes up this 430 billion rand, and where is the money moving? How is it moving?
No. So I'll give you context, right?
Yes.
The measurement for that money is primarily measured through financial transactions. They transact either through payment devices, either through funding for housing, that is structured through banks or any other institutions that are operating within this particular market and space. But however, you then mention a critical thing to say, but if we say that the township economy is worth 400 billion, how is it that the people that operate within there are not representative in monetary form, what the township economy looks like? And the short answer of that is because we have not built an inclusive economy. And the challenge with not building an inclusive economy is that we have not taken a top-down and a bottom-up approach where we are procuring our goods from township-based businesses. And we ourselves as an individuals have not demonstrated, you know, strength in being able to supply our own goods to our own people. You know, up until that happens, we will still be in a position where there is a big deficit opportunities are concerned. And then the other side of it is every time we talk about malls going into the township, we talk about them, and then we talk about the jobs that people will have when they're hired at these malls. That in and of itself then offers a limitation, because the limitation with that whole entire thinking is that it doesn't ever, to a degree, take into account the fact that there must be market access, you know, for the local retailers. You need to also be able to open up that mall space within the township for township retailers so that they're able to also then sell their product. So that then in itself ends up becoming an exclusionary practice that leaves other people behind instead of bringing them along for the journey.
But here's the thing, Bulelani, not so long ago, there was this big push from government to register spaza shops and small township businesses formally. But thousands didn't register. So why do you think so many business owners are hesitant or unwilling to formalize? Is it a hesitancy and an unwillingness, or are there things we don't realize are at play underneath the surface? What are the real challenges they are facing?
No, man, I think for me, you know, we got to think about it this way. We talk about this formalization conversation and then forget a couple of things.
Yeah.
Formalizing your business is expensive. So if ever you say to small businesses, formalize, but you don't provide a means by which they can access markets, then you've actually said everything but nothing.
Yeah.
Because the big question will still then come up, you know, when I formalize, and formalizing means now I need to file my annual financial returns.
I need to file
with CIPC.
Yeah.
What does that mean in the long run for my business? Because I've done all these things and I now need to be financially liable to a financial institution and even to SARS, but I don't have the capital to then show for it in the long run. So it then leaves you and puts you in a position where you're now more frustrated than you are empowered. So, and I think for me, the big conversation must be to say, number one, we're not giving out handouts, but what we are then primarily saying is that if you're a small business owner and you're a township-based business, part of supporting you means that we are then going to provide you, and we are then going to provide you with the resources and the tools that will then assist you in the formalization of your business. But once formalized, we will also then help you in the setting up of structures that will enable you to be able to then access market. The moment we do that, then it changes the conversation entirely. We are building a pipeline for development and growth.
You know, yesterday on the show, I was talking about how for a lot of people who have businesses, we're just actually accidental survivalists. We're not building businesses that will be sustained in the long run, such that if I'm ill or I die, somebody else can pick up because I've got SOPs, because I've literally built something that can outlive me and that can live outside of me. And what you're talking about now is really the systems, the structure, the support that can allow for us to stop building businesses for today's income or this month's income, but things that will stand even outside of us.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think for me, and that's where, and you must also remember, before we talk about that way and all this stuff, you know, when we start businesses, majority, about 66% of the people that register, not register, but they start doing business, they do it as sustenance business.
Yeah.
Because they purely want to put food on the table.
Yeah.
As a reactionary measure for not having jobs and, you know, as not having alternatives for them to be able to develop and grow themselves. But then, over and above that, it then says a couple of things. It then says to us that those individuals, we then need to then create a clear line of demarcation. That talks to a couple of simple nuggets and notes.
Okay.
Those individuals, do they have the desire or even capabilities to grow their businesses, to grow their side hustle into an actual straight hustle, into a micro enterprise, into a small business, into a medium-sized business? And I think being able to then provide the technical tool for them to do that is important. But sometimes they are doing what they are doing because it's the only thing that they know. And whenever we don't educate those individuals on the opportunities available for them to develop and grow, they will still continue on the same trajectory. And then we then say that they are not interested in their own personal development and their own growth. So I then think for me then, which is why then information becomes a catalyst in the sense that if you don't know what you need to know, chances are you're not growing the way that you need to grow.
Sure.
Because your knowledge will limit you. And you must remember, so there's one thing that I think it was one of the professors and the founder of Regenesis. He used to say, you know, we start businesses according to the level of our exposure, the level of our knowledge, and and the level of our networks. And what that simply speaks to is you can't start what you don't know.
You cannot.
You're starting the business that you're starting because you've got work experience, you read about it, you know people who run this business, you have been schooled, you've traveled and you've seen, and as a result, the seed was planted, which then means that bring education closer to people so that they're able to then choose for themselves and find the opportunities for their own personal development and growth.
Is that what you seek to do with tea?
Yeah, definitely. I think for me, the work that we seek to do with tea talks to that.
Yeah.
You know, it talks to going into spaces that were previously, that are still to this day considered as, you know, economic dead zones. And going to these spaces where e-commerce and consumption happens, and then to then sprout out a different idea of thinking. To then say to this particular market, you can actually grow your offering way bigger than what it is right now so that it's able to, you know, take over the market. And I think that for me becomes at the depth of my desire in as far as being able to support these amazing businesses.
Jeez, man, this is incredible work. So talk to me about who comes into tea. Where are they initially? What is the transformation that you facilitate, and what is their state after having interacted with you and your business?
No. So obviously tea does a number of different things, right? I mean, we've got enterprise development programs, supply development programs, skills development programs. And then we've got our workshop program, which is our flagship, and it's a popular program that people know. You know, the Gassi Business Workshop.
Yes.
And I think for me, it's a myriad of different things. But however, what we measure out for, number one, is the impact of the information and the application post-encounter with the information, right? And then we then measure out for sales and sales development growth, because that's also like, that's also a very critical thing for us to then measure out for.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the fact that 68% of these entrepreneurs who attend our workshops do business with each other. That for me is a beautiful thing, because it tells to the fact that these guys are able to trade in and amongst each other in the absence of a third party facilitating that dialogue, you know. And that for me is one of the, that for me is one of the biggest and most beautiful things that could potentially even be done. And I think then from a procurement perspective, you know, we, in the past year, we've procured goods from 247 township-based suppliers nationwide. We have supplied us with various goods. We have procured over 488 goods from, you know, from service providers nationwide. And that's our deliberate attempt at being able to impact and support these amazing businesses in a meaningful but also equally impactful manner.
Oh man, you speak of these businesses, and I'm really curious to know this. What types of businesses actually tend to thrive in the township? Are there any business ideas or industries that are often overlooked but have serious potential?
You know, I think for me, think about it this way. And I think I always tell the guys, the best place to find your the inner ideas that you need to innovate now is, let's look at what the avant-garde has been doing. You know, today, at this day, we talk about the last mile delivery service as being a key thing and a hidden market, right? But in reality, today they are doing it with apps where guys are on scooters in the township delivering things. But in reality, when you think about it at its depth, one of the businesses that was successful that were ran at its early stage by your Dr. Richard Maponya was a last mile delivery business. He had 100 guys on bicycles in Soweto delivering milk. There was no app. There was no GPS. How were they collecting money? How were they delivering those controls? So if those entrepreneurs or individuals were innovating those solutions over 40 or 50 years ago, that means that you don't necessarily need to invent anything new. Let's do the deep dive of understanding what they were doing then and how they were doing it, and just enable it to make it easier and simpler for adoption. Because they've already done the deep stick research in what they were doing to then unpack the fact that there is an actual market. The challenge is that sometimes what we're trying to do is to find things, and sometimes that aren't even there, whereas as opposed to referencing how things were done then and then adding new age capabilities to it.
Can you tell us one major success story that you've seen in your experience that speaks to exactly that? Something that was traditionally done, I guess, in a way that wasn't really advanced or modern, and they took it and made and evolved it into something that is more recent and something that capitalizes or leverages tech.
I mean, I mean, there's a number of things. Obviously, number one is the last mile delivery service.
Yeah.
Is there, it's the adoption of e-commerce within the township.
Yeah.
Is there adoption across businesses at a simplified scale with doctors making appointments and booking for them, and mechanics now being able to utilize digital platforms where you can book a mechanic, pay for them, they fix the car, they only get their money once the car is repaired.
Yeah.
And running away from the age old, I paid him but didn't get my car fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's been a, lot of advancements in as far as that regard is concerned, right? And for me, I think also whenever we talk about tech, we overcomplicate the conversation.
Okay.
But for me, tech, when we talk about the application of tech in any business, in the simplifying, we need to simplify the conversation. And what we've done is that we've reduced or we've limited the tech conversation only to businesses that are in with apps, ICT and the sort. But in reality, every business should have and can have tech capabilities. You know, what I mean by that is, it's like the entrepreneur that we work with who's got a cart and donkeys and tingisamalahle all the way in Orange Farm. And in doing that, he also then collects rubble. But his biggest frustration is that the addresses that he sent, he doesn't know because the streets are not clearly marked in Orange Farm. And a simple tech capability like WhatsApp location pins changes his business entirely. Now he can get a simple WhatsApp pin from a smartphone he bought for 2,000 Rand and is able to deliver directly to the doorstep through a pin and a picture of the house. That in and of itself changes the conversation. So when we talk about tech, we must not talk tech and exclude. We must talk tech and talk inclusion in the most simplistic manner so we bring people along for the journey.
Yo, Angs, I enjoy your conversation because, you know, when I started, I said, I want us to simplify it, and you are doing exactly that. Because when people in the township think business, they're thinking ispaza, hair salon, you know, those things that look like zitelelegile. And I don't think ukuthi people think about how can I actually make this more efficient. It just becomes what it always was. And I think that's why for a lot of them it becomes unsustainable, you know?
Yeah, no, man. I think for me, you know, and even if it's a puzzle shop, right?
Yeah.
It's really rethinking what we are doing. Rethinking, working collaboratively, harnessing the harnessing group buying power and being competitive. And I think the moment we're able to do this, then it changes the conversation. And I think sometimes what we do is that whenever we say that we're starting small, we limit the mindset from development and growth because we indirectly tell ourselves that don't think anything bigger than where you are. And in reality, you know, when you say you're starting small, that starting small should be limited to a resource start. It means that I've got four computers, but my mindset has been capacitated and it's big enough, the biggest opportunities, that when I walk into a room, I do not walk into a room as someone who's got four computers. I walk into a room as someone who's got a yard and yard of computers in his factory, even though I don't have a factory. Why? Because you are capacitating your mindset to the business that you want to have in the next 10 years, not limiting the mindset to the business that you are currently running now. Because that is the resource limitation, but should never be a mindset limitation.
You know, I'm hearing you loud and clear, right? But I'm thinking of the people I grew up with, Elokshin, and very few of them have this level of thinking or this kind of thinking. How do we actually cultivate this when people only have seeds, but they see a tree that can be chopped down into furniture, that can be used as fruit, that can be used as shade? What is it that can be done to actually foster and cultivate this kind of thinking and mentality in the people in Lokshin?
No, man, I think for me it's education, right? At a high school level, at a primary school level, it's educating the young individuals so that they know. Not just know their worth, but they know the importance of being able to execute on all these amazing things. And I think the moment we do that, then it starts to change the conversation for the future generations to come. But for the ones who are already grown, they're established, they're older, is to start to expose them to new ways of doing things in a manner that's sustainable. You know, for me, we talk about, you hear large corporates in big panels or panel discussions around the green economy, and the conclusion is we need to make the township green. But the township has always been green, and the biggest part of the green economy that we've operated in is a circular economy. You know, clothes went down from mother to daughter, daughter to cousin, plates. You know, one tea bag, you know, fed 7 or 6 people before you pour the milk. So we were always sparing. That is circular economy. You know, that Rama container that my work, she took and made it a container, then it became a scaftine, then it became a precious thing. So the big conversation is, do we see the opportunities and the things that we've always been doing? So the big part is going to be to say to the people, let us not create new avenues. Let us teach you to see opportunities in the things that you have discarded or you weren't aware of.
You know, you mentioned a word that I'm going to bring back into the question that I'm about to ask you now. So in November, South Africa will be hosting the G20 summit, right? Most people in the townships might think, that's not for us. But how do you think something like the G20 or any big event really could actually bring opportunities to township entrepreneurs?
No, man, I just think for me, I mean, obviously the G20, we need inclusion, which is why we've participated and we're sitting in those steering committees. It's important because anytime a conversation is had about you and you're not in the room, then you should never, ever complain tomorrow when decisions are being made. And I think for me, then it says to us, we need to be very clear and transparent about the fact that we don't just want a seat at the table. We want to ensure that when decisions are made, they are made with us in mind, you know, so that we are not left out of critical conversations at the end of the day. And because those conversations, once conclusions are met, we then are met with the brunt of execution as opposed to, you know, being part of the actual conversation as it grows and develops and grows.
And it is easier to actually just have the responsibility to execute than being an activist than having to start the conversation. That is more difficult.
True. So which is why then I think for me, it's important for us to then have the conversation, which is why even now, you know, with tea and the work that we do, it's that constant iterating, building, making sure that we go deeper, educating, you know, being in boardrooms, it's important so that whatever we speak about in the boardroom, we simplify their understanding, and then we go into the streets and then simplify it even further so that they understand what's being said there and the other way around, and to understand that there is no hostility, we are bridging gaps.
You know, and speaking of boardrooms and being part of those steering committees, if you had the president's ear today, and he asked you, what policy or initiatives do you believe will make the biggest difference for township entrepreneurs? What would you say?
I mean, I think the biggest policy is the current national proposed National Township Economic Act that was done by that is being done now by the Department of Small Business Development. So I read that document reads beautiful. It's like the Gauteng province TIDA, which talks about find them, support them, get research, get data, capacitate them with knowledge, train them, fund them, and then give them access to market. And then as government, we will procure 30 or 40% of our goods from them. But although all of those documents works good, I would then say to the president, let's implement. Maybe find an implementation partner that will operate in the absence of government's bureaucracy so that for the implementation of all these amazing policies, so that they get to the people that it needs to get to. Because the issue with government is the bureaucracy that limits the impact and development and growth of our people.
Are you positioning yourself and T as that implementation partner?
As it is, we're an implementation partner for a number of corporates, and we definitely love to be the implementation partner for, you know, G20 activities in the township. But also equally, we're positioning ourselves for that, which is why we're participating in these task teams and these task meetings so that there's impact towards these individuals.
You're so incredible. I'm listening like, Mina Ranti.
No, thank you so much.
How is my brain structured? Because this is absolutely brilliant. Bulelani, you spend a lot of your life in township spaces. You're building entrepreneurs. You're mentoring them. You're driving, literally driving development. What is your big dream or vision for the township economy in the next 10 years? Let's make it short term.
I mean, I think for me, there's four things really. For us is to find in every major township hubs of economic development that can act as co-working spaces, can help township individuals move their ideas from ideation all the way to execution within the townships that they live in. The second one for me is to ensure that entrepreneurial and financial education is a key thing at a high school and a primary school level. Those two for me are critical so that we equip our young individuals about the financial systems and also about what entrepreneurship is. The third one for me is to be able to then create market access opportunities, either through retail, procurement, to supply development, enterprise supply development. And the third one for me is really to really just hone in on our data and to ensure that we've got the richest and the best data on our micro enterprises as well as the small businesses.
How do you make entrepreneurship less intimidating than it sounds? Because when you think about the township economy, and I'm not saying people from the township are dumb, because I'm from the township. I grew up there. I live there. And so I'm not dumb. And I believe none of them are, right? None of us are. So how do you make it less intimidating to somebody who wants to make something of their lives, but entrepreneurship? So how do you
I think for me is to tell them the truth, and the truth is entrepreneurship is tough. You know, entrepreneurship is tough because entrepreneurship is, you can do everything right and sometimes not win at that moment. And sometimes when you don't win at that moment, it's very frustrating. And I think it's important that we tell you the truth, but you're gonna have to be resilient and play the long game. Because when you're resilient and play the long game, you know, things will, you know, what you're trying to achieve at the end of the day is opapa. You know, but you have to be dedicated. You have to be focused. You know, you have to operate on a zero base. You have to be committed. And then you also almost have to operate with a level of gratitude that says, you know, no one owes you anything. So that whatever opportunities that are given, instead of being feeling and operating with a sense and a level of entitlement. Because when you open with a level of, when you operate with a level of entitlement, you won't be able to take advantage of all the opportunities that lay await, that are available or should be available to you.
What are you most proud of when you're looking in the mirror and you see yourself with your, I don't know if you're in the house, but let's say you do. What are you most proud of?
Sure, man. I guess for someone who never thinks about the work and never thinks about all these things, I guess now in hindsight, I'd say that I'm definitely proud of the impact that we've had, you know, over the past 10 years. I mean, 10 years later, we've directly impacted over 80,000 township entrepreneurs. When we started Doras on the goal was to do it as a side thing where 10 of them come together once a month and we'll do it as a side thing. But over the
call ended. Oh no, I think we've just lost our guest. Let me try bring him back, because this is a fantastic conversation and I don't want it to end. I've got to be honest with you right now, I'm so heartbroken on this International Day of Happiness. I am unable to complete my conversation with Bulelani for technical reasons, or due to technical reasons. And I'm really, really sad, because I think it is getting juicier than it was when we initially started. I don't even know if it's still worth it to bring him on the line just to wrap up the conversation again. And even if we'll be able, or whether or not we'll be able to do it, I don't know. But anyway, I love the conversation that we had. Anyway, you know, if there's one thing I hope you can walk away with, at least with the parts that you did get, is that township economy is more than just about numbers. It's about people and it's about possibilities. So whether you're an entrepreneur or a dreamer or someone who's always believed there's more to be done in our communities, tonight's message was simple. The township is not a dead end. Those are the words that Ubulelani used. It's a gold mine waiting to be unlocked. And I'd just like to thank him in absentia, and I hope he is listening, for showing us what's possible when passion meets purpose.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.